This is Tech on the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Ben Johnson.
Ride sharing is a sector of tech where competition is growing at home and abroad. Just this week, Waze, the mapping app owned by Google, started a small carpooling pilot program for people in California's Bay Area. The two big players at home have always been Uber and Lyft. But whether it's fighting for private capital, the spur growth, engaging in a spirited discussion about support for drivers, or sparring with municipalities over background checks and other regulations, there's a lot on Lyft's plate these days. The company has also recently partnered with an investor, GM, to push forward self-driving cars. So that's how I'm going to start my conversation with John Zimmer, co-founder and president of Lyft. John, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with a little bit about GM and self-driving cars. The company has invested $500 million in Lyft. You have this express drive program that makes it easier for drivers to rent GM cars. But the eventual plan for your company is for a number of your vehicles to be autonomous.
Yeah, so I think, as you mentioned, there are two main things that we set out to do with General Motors. The first was to get great access to vehicles for drivers. So when you look at a market like where we first rolled out Express Drive, Chicago, we had over 60,000 people apply to Lyft who didn't have a car that could qualify to drive on the platform.
Uh-huh.
And so providing them with a vehicle, if they drive 65 rides in a week at no cost is fantastic for those drivers and for the company. So that's step one. Long term, absolutely, we think that autonomous vehicles are something that are going to be coming to cities across the country. And to be able to work with the leading manufacturer in the United States, General Motors, is incredibly exciting to us.
All right. You say cities there, which is maybe a key term. Where and when do you think Lyft's autonomous cars will arrive first?
We have nothing to announce in terms of specific cities or dates on autonomous at this time.
What can you ballpark it for me? Are we just in terms of self-driving vehicles generally? I mean, do you think we're 5 years out, 10 years out? What?
No, I think there's a lot to learn over the next few years, and so we're gonna wait to provide guidance on exactly when they'll be coming.
All right, fair enough. Before we talk regulation, what are some of the other technical hurdles to having autonomous cars and for Lyft specifically?
Well, I think one thing to think about is the likely way that autonomous vehicles roll out first are, we believe, on a network versus private ownership. And so there's a few reasons for this. One, from a regulatory perspective, it's much easier to regulate. And two, we believe the way autonomous rolls out is with first some few use cases like point to point, meaning it would be more similar to transit, a fixed route. And as you start doing this, more and more people could potentially move over from car ownership because the cost will be lower. During that period, more people coming onto services like Lyft,
mm-hmm.
The number of drivers we will have on the platform will also continue to grow until eventually the autonomous vehicle will be able to do more things than just a fixed route. But to start, there will be limitations such as under a certain speed limit, certain weather conditions, and potentially even a fixed route. So we imagine this rollout lasts several years at the point when it begins.
How's the company thinking right now about the definition of employment for drivers?
So the drivers on our platform range, from doing this a few hours a week to several hours a week. In fact, 80% of drivers drive under 15 hours on the platform. And drivers are flexible to drive whenever they want and to use their own vehicle, or in the case of Chicago currently, a vehicle from the Express Drive hub. So drivers on our platform are independent contractors. This is something that, if you look to another related industry, taxis, has been true historically. And in those situations, they're required to use company-specific vehicles and drive at specific times. And so having the flexibility of our platform and the way things operate lends itself to this independent contractor status. For those that drive over, call it approximately 40 hours a week, it's based on rides, not hours.
Sure.
those drivers are able to retain all their commissions. So 20% that they would pay to Lyft is actually returned to them. So we still believe in incentivizing and taking care of those drivers that are driving longer on the platform.
Sure.
And we think that by having the independent contractor status, it provides both the drivers and us with the right amount of flexibility.
Well, what about some kind of path to some form of bargaining? I know that Uber made an agreement this week with, or I guess it was last week now, with some drivers in New York City. Are you guys thinking about that at all, a way to work more directly with drivers to make sure that they have some of the social support that they need?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, we're excited to be part of what we see as the future of work. And I think there's more to learn and you know, we'll continue working with drivers. Something that's been true to us for a very long time is that we've worked with both regulators and drivers to find the best path forward, and I imagine we'll continue to do that. Mm. And we are in constant conversation with various drivers about what we can continue to do better. And so I imagine we continue to evolve with our community.
You guys stepped away from Austin because the city wanted more stringent background checks for drivers. Do you think that's the right move for you?
Well, I'd like to take a step back there. I think there's a misconception that in this case specifically, fingerprint background checks are bulletproof. And so what happened in Austin was specifically around fingerprint checks, and you said more stringent.
Yeah.
I would argue that they're not actually more stringent. In fact, you know, our checks have, from what many would say, would be better data, more comprehensive, less biased. And so what happens with fingerprint checks is that they pass data from the county level to the state level and then to the federal level. And oftentimes data along the way does not get passed or is not updated efficiently. And so what you end up with is an incomplete data set at the federal level and oftentimes a bias towards arrest records, which did not lead to a conviction. In the data sets we use, there is a county level check, state level check, and federal check. And for example, in a county where the data is maybe not available from a digital record, the group we work with actually sends in runners to go look at the physical record at that county court. So we're confident that we have better data, number one, that is less biased. And number two is with Lyft, the vision that we've always work to create is to reconnect people and communities through better transportation and to create actual ride sharing where multiple people are going in the same car, multiple people along the same route, and drivers that, you know, don't have the 40 hours a week to put into this. And in order to have those more part-time drivers on the platform, you need to make an operations that are maximize safety and also or something that someone could be processed within, you know, a few days.
So what do you think the path is back then to Lyft and Uber, for that matter, operating in Austin again?
I mean, I think there are, you know, you got to think back also to when we started. When we started, Lyft was the first to create peer-to-peer ride sharing, right? And there were no rules and regulations around it. And we worked with the state of California to create a model that is now, you know, brought across 30 different states with new rules for this this category. And so I think we will do what we've always tried to do, which is work together with local regulators to make something that maximizes safety, that solves for pieces they want to solve for, and at the same time allows us to operate. So we'll work hard to continue finding a path forward in Austin, but with the specific proposal that they've made on how to do it, which is more typical to how, you know, taxis have done it in the past and works for that model, does not work for the peer-to-peer model that we operate at Lyft.
Is Uber more of a threat to your business at home or the business you're trying to build abroad?
So Lyft is focused on the United States right now. So we operate our own local operations in the U.S., and then we have partnerships internationally.
Yep.
So, for example, in China, we partnered with Didi, the largest ride-sharing company there that has over 80%, close to 90% market share. And so what that means is that someone on the Lyft platform can open the Lyft app in China and get a ride through the Didi network and have more coverage than any other player out there. That to us, I think, has been a great focus strategy. The United States opportunity alone, $2 trillion is spent every year on owning and operating a car. And we believe that long term, that will be part of a ride sharing network like Lyft. And so I think that focus will pay off. We are now the fastest growing company in the United States. We've taken significant market share from our competitor. And by focusing, we'll continue to do so.
So the short answer is at home. Right? I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we're operating.
I've seen a lot of Lyft advertising in here in New York. How do you decide where you can scale up and how to spend your money? And do you think it's sustainable, all the promotion that you're doing here in the city, both in terms of marketing, but in also in terms of how you get drivers to sign up and use the service?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, on a per-ride basis, each ride is profitable. And I think then when you look at the future opportunity of the business, as mentioned, the average American household spends, the average American household spends over $9,000 a year on owning and maintaining their car, total that equals $2 trillion market. And so is our belief that investing in that future opportunity is important, you know, meaning the market 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now is going to be worth more than it is today. And so we want to invest in that growth. And so, you know, step one is saying, okay, on a per ride basis, each ride is profitable. And then how much do you want to invest for that future opportunity? To us, then you look at the payback. You invest in a new driver or in a new passenger, and how long does it take you to pay back? And we're very happy with the levels of payback we're seeing today. And so that's kind of how we make those decisions.
Can you talk about a way that your company is using data that you didn't anticipate you would be able to a few years ago? Was there anything that's been really surprising to you just about the things that you're bringing in and how you're looking at them and how that informs the company's operations?
Yeah, I think what we're doing with ETAs is very interesting. So ETAs, estimated time of arrival, is a key metric for our business. It's something that's very important to both our drivers and passengers. You want to minimize that number to maximize what a driver can earn.
But you also want it to be accurate, right?
and you want it to be accurate. And
sure.
So we calculate billions of ETAs every day because we're not just calculating the one ETA you see when you open up the app, but the ETAs of all the cars around you. And as part of that, you have to know, what direction is the car traveling? Is it on that bridge or is it under that bridge? So there's a lot of specificity to how you can get that perfect ETA metric. And so I've been, you know, incredibly impressed with what our team has done. We've become, you know, more and more efficient and accurate at doing that, which has allowed us to launch products like Lyftline, which is a share ride. Because if you don't have accurate ETAs, to try and pair up multiple routes together is more difficult.
You've talked a lot about the future of transportation and work and how Lyft is entwined in both of those things. Can you tell me what you think Lyft will be as a company in 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah. So, you know, I think if we look at historically, you know, you go from water to canals to railroads to highways, as the way people get around, the way goods get around in a city, and then those forms of transportation actually shape the city. And so what our hope and belief is that Lyft can be that next form of transportation instead of owning a car. And so I'd say in that 10-plus year timeframe, we'd like to make it so that nobody in the United States needs to own a car anymore. And that opens up a lot of economic opportunity for that individual instead of spending money on the car, as well as in a local city where it's easier and more affordable to get around.
You're partnered with GM. How is GM thinking about that? I mean, I would imagine that that's scary to a company like GM, that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think the end of car ownership doesn't mean the end of cars, but it does mean a massive shift and change for the car industry. And so What was very exciting to us is that when we first discussed the idea of working together with them towards the end of last year, they shared our vision. You know, they saw that specifically to them in city environments over the next, you know, call it 10 plus years, there will be a major shift in ownership. By sharing that belief, I think both of us can address the opportunity in a bigger way.
Can you talk about how you protect drivers from driving too much, working too much, making sure that they aren't sleep deprived?
Sure. So we've had this feature, I believe, since the beginning of having the app, that if a driver drives, it depends on the market, could range from 10 to 14 hours, we will require a 6-hour break from when they can sign back on.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit about where the company is with mapping and how you share some of that mapping information with the drivers themselves and make sure that, you know, either do they have to use the same mapping or the same routes that you're delivering them or what?
Yeah, so in terms of mapping, I think there's various elements of it. So ETAs is one element that we discussed that we do in-house. We calculate ourselves based on historic data as well as our own proprietary algorithms.
Uh-huh.
And then navigation would be another piece. And for navigation, what we're doing currently is giving drivers the choice to use whether it's Google Maps, Waze, or Apple Maps. And once they put in their preference, they then get automatically brought into that navigation app once the passenger has plugged in their destination.
The tech industry is having an interesting moment, right? I mean, a lot of companies aren't super into IPOing right now, I think for obvious reasons. A company like Lyft has spent a lot of effort scaling. But at some point, some of the private equity might run out, right? So how are you thinking about profitability in spring of 2016?
Yeah, so we've raised enough capital such that we don't need to go out and raise an additional round. I think that the environment and the opportunity here is so exciting. It means that, you know, we might go straight for, you know, not raising on the private markets again. But we've been fortunate that, you know, we've been able to raise $2 billion. There's a lot of excitement for this specific space.
Uh-huh.
And as part of that last round, we put together the financial roadmap to profitability such that we don't need to raise again and that we control our own destiny.
Can you give me any more hints on that roadmap? How far along the roadmap are you? Have you arrived at your destination?
I can't give any more background on that.
Is there any other news that you want to share with us today?
Maybe one other element. You know, we recently launched a new feature called Express Pay for drivers as one of the ways that we really work to take care of the driver community. So Express Pay is the idea that you can get paid in the same day that you drive. And it's now over 30%, approximately close to now 40% of payments are going through this Express Pay feature that we partnered with Stripe on. So we're really excited to see that and being able to get drivers that payout in the same day that they drive.
John Zimmer, co-founder and president of Lyft. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you.